Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Reuben Schreck, Head of Quality Assurance at EE.
With regards to our whole organization and focus obviously on QA, that's the only thing I can talk about, but it is interesting. I'm always up for something like that because it's a win-win, I think, for both sides. I think we're doing quite interesting stuff right now. QA, usually, just before I spoke to you, I had a work experience graduate in, and I spoke with him for about 45 minutes and explained to him what we do as QA. I was giving a really high-level overview because usually nobody's interested in that. So I always believe nobody gets out of school, college, or wherever they're coming from and says, oh, I want to be a QA guy. Nobody. I have not met a single one yet.
Well, maybe this doing this podcast, you might be able to influence a couple of people. We'll see.
I ended up in here in QA by accident, and I love it.
Right. Well, I mean, that's actually compelling. So, I'd be interested to hear kind of your journey, how you know what your early days of technology looked like, and, sure. And what your initial interests were.
I'm probably not typical. I studied civil engineering back in Germany. I was not really interested in that anymore, and I was 26 years old and I bought my first computer. Yeah, I'm not one of the computer kids out of the 90s or so, 80s in my case, who had like computers were around my youth life here there. I knew how to use a word processor back in the day. I knew how to turn one on, but never had my own one. I had other interests, but I quite quickly found out that this is actually an area I'm really good at. I'm not a developer. A lot of QA guys are developers. I'm not a developer. I did a lot of things. And after a while, I figured that I will never finish my university degree in civil engineering. And in Germany, we have something like the Job Center. And I got like a course financed by the Arbeitsamt, and which was IT network management course, where we touched literally everything, starting from novel network to Microsoft Office backend, which was NT and the servers behind Exchange servers and so on, up to SAP R3 at this time in late 90s. So my initial ambition was becoming a SAP R3 administrator when I figured that out. But it was too boring after I first installed it to proceed that, and I was a bit of a mess. I didn't know what to do, and I started tail end of this course. I started applying for jobs, and I found a little consultancy where a friend of mine was working in, IT consultancy, who did Domino Notes consulting back in the day. It was a big Cooper platform, not as big as Outlook, but I went to the interview. I bought a book a week beforehand. I read a bit about Domino Notes. I got the job. And 4 weeks later, I started as a consultant at the Deutsche Bank in Germany, doing Notes Domino stuff. And quite quickly, I became responsible for rolling internally out the content management system based on Domino Notes, their home-built content management system. And this is how I ended up in IT, not even QA yet. And then my small consultancy created it was 2000, around 2000. My company with people from part of Deutsche Bank created a new company, and which became my first Vodafone company I worked for, and they want to do application service providing, become an application service provider, which is now called software as a service. In 2000, nobody heard of that, and it fails dramatically. But this was my entrance into the mobile world, into Vodafone. And then I between 2000 and 2006, I worked for various Vodafone companies, small subsidiaries of Vodafone Global, never phone operator. But in this time, around 2001 or so, there was a project coming up, and somebody asked, my little company was asked to build a lot of things and look into a lot of things. And one was building up a little test lab for GPS cards, for laptops, testing to improve them that can be actually used over the MAPI protocol from Outlook at the time, which was horrendous. Nobody wanted to do that. I was the only one left that, okay, I do that. And this was my first QA job, which ended up having one of the first Vodafone Global mobile test labs for mobile applications outside of BlackBerry, because back in the day, mobile was always BlackBerry mobile emails. But in about 2004 or so, Vodafone was looking for having a competitive product in for mobile email. And I was for Vodafone Global, not for an operator, running this test lab. At the beginning, it was me alone. At the end, it was me with six people working for me and various vendors. So, and from then on, I always bound quality. It's either quality or customer, technical account management. I did a bit of pre-sales, but it was always around quality and making customer, delivering customer the value they are asking for. And this is when I left Vodafone, I switched to one vendor, which is now called Good Technology. Back in the day, it was called Visto. I was running their pre-sales team for Europe. But again, it was customer focused, and I had a lot of influence on the quality there as well. But while at Visto, I switched, I got an opportunity to work in the US and as a strategic QA manager there. This was then going really all in QA and running a small team, which strategically helped to improve the direction of the overall quality and testing of Visto, then called Good Technology.
And so just out of curiosity, my obviously kind of basic understanding of QA has always kind of been associated with, mobile technology. Did it kind of exist, but just in a different capacity before mobile came about?
Oh, definitely. I think one way or other, there's always QA with regards to software delivery, because everybody wants to deliver software, no matter what software. They call it testing, they call it quality assurance, they call it quality control. You have a lot of discussions about this QA. I see QA being the accountable. I'm looking after quality. Testing is a big part of it, but there's other aspects to quality. It's about how specs are written, how code is written. That's all part of quality assurance. It's not the major part of the work, because you start at the end or before it goes out, at the last gate, this needs to be secure. But if you have your sorted out your QA, your test team, sorry to say that, if you sorted out your test team, then you can start looking to other areas. How to make the team more efficient, how to move right now nowadays, everybody's talking about, forget about Agile. Agile is around the block for a while. Now everybody talks about DevOps, which is not really a methodology. It's a cultural change. Moving testing to the left, removing our silo. This is a big transition we're going through right now. And which is really, really exciting, because this is, I have a feeling right now I'm working on something cutting edge, not from technology perspective, but from process and how we can deliver better software in future.
I'm really curious now. So, can you kind of fill us in a little bit more detail on that?
So yeah, if you look at DevOps and there's a few punchlines or keywords you hear online or when you search a bit everywhere, people talk about the Spotify model. Everybody who's listening to that, Google Spotify model, and the second link should be, at least was in the past, don't copy the Spotify model. We're here at EE, we're not copying it, we're trying to adopt it in the way that it works for us. Because if you want to be efficient and modern in how to deliver software, you need to make it right for you, because everybody has other dependencies working on. If you're not just a little startup with two developers and a tester who are just putting something out, you will start having dependencies. Where you need to look into other things, and if you're working for bigger organizations, even more complicated. So DevOps is a cultural change, and DevOps a cultural change means moving testing, moving quality control to the left, start earlier, work, break down silos. There's no development silo anymore, test silo. Back order for world, people, there was a specification. When the specification was done, it was handed over for development. They went off for weeks, months, wrote code. Then it was handed over for testing. And then it was tested. Maybe some bug fixes coming in. And then it was released. That is old waterfall way. Agile is a bit more, you work in teams alongside each other, iterative and everything. But DevOps is pushing you more, getting involved earlier, getting people like, I say about my testers in particular, they know the product, our platforms better than anybody else because they're testing day in, day out. And then having them early involved in the design phase and in the feasibility phase will actually add quality at the beginning because A, they know what's coming. B, they can influence, that doesn't make sense. But also, and this is the whole team effort. It's a team which is not a development team or a test team or whatever. Everybody should work together and this team will be responsible for the delivery into production. We obviously, when you follow the Spotify model, you call it squads and tribes and chapters and everything. So I'm now the chapter lead for QA as head of QA. I lead this chapter, but then there's like a matrix management which we're building up here, which is exciting because we need to all work together to make this happen. If development code is completed, the development team is still the part of the squad. It's not the development team, but the developers as part of the squad are still around. They fix bugs. They help getting the testing done and getting it out the door. That is, and this is the biggest cultural change you're facing. And this is what we're going through right now. Because this is really changing the mindset. It's like I write code and that's it. You do the other stuff. It's this team effort. And if you get the people on board, you'll see the quality will improve, the efficiency will improve, and everything comes after that.
I feel that since you started in technology, that the different teams have been molded and become closer and closer together, and they work. In a synchronized way, much more so.
Yeah, definitely. I think the first push was when the Agile Manifesto was published, I don't know, late 2001, 2000, something, sometime around that, don't nail me on the date. That was the first push where everybody was talking about co-located teams and so on and working together and working in a group. And funny enough, it took a while and a little bit more thinking about that to make it DevOps, because DevOps is actually pushing further. Agile was more focused on development and testing. DevOps includes REST, service and operations, release management. Everything should be included in DevOps. That's the team. So it is definitely a development towards going more into the direction you just described. I went to an event in the States in 2008 or so when I was living there about agile development. So it was quite a while after the manifesto was written, and I met a few guys. I can't remember which company it was. It was one of the big ones. So they talked about how they work agile. There were two developers and had one tester in their scrum, and the developers were complaining that they didn't have anything to do when they were writing their code because they need to wait for the tester to finish testing, which just illustrates where they were not there yet because they didn't understand their team. They were working in a scrum team, but there was still the dev team and the test team, which was one person. And this is a cultural change I was referring to earlier. It's really getting people on board and you need to, if you're in the position, you need to engage them early, show them the benefits, explain where the pitfalls might be or make them aware of that. I'm the QA guy here, but without my peers and my boss, we would not be able to do that. It's everybody needs to do and have a common understanding. Nowadays, it's so much more like, let's try this, and if it's not working, we adjust it to make it better. It's not, we write some, the transition we're doing now, we've almost complete, actually, I think we're completed, but we already know it will change down the line. It will change. We need to adopt what is coming, and we continuously need to improve for new technologies coming in, for when we find that the process is not as good as it could be, we are open-minded, and you need to be open-minded in nowadays to be open for changes. And it's not only technology changes and everything. It's for everything. It's for process and everything. You need to be willing. Look, if this is not working as you want, change it and move on. Always look forward.
So yeah, it seems to me like, one of the biggest challenges that you're going to face at the moment is kind of almost less about the actual technology and more about kind of the leadership and kind of molding that culture in the way that's going to suit, you know, this agile, et cetera, way of working.
So it's absolutely right. Even if you look into the literature, it says DevOps is more cultural change than anything else. Yes, you change a bit of way of working, but it's more the cultural change, which is the most challenging one. I personally enjoy this challenge because I had the opportunity to build up my team over the last couple of months to reflect that. It was for me when I joined EE, it was more like on the digital side, it was more like the green field. There were no QA structure in place. There were some testers who got told by development what to test, which was interesting from a QA, from a experienced QA perspective. That's, oh, this is going to work in a company like that. So I had a bit of a green field here. I can build up my team. I can have my test managers around me and I could build up a team together. And with them being on this journey is quite rewarding because we were discussing things. We're not always agreeing, which is absolutely essential for me to improve. I want to work with people who are open for the discussion and having new ideas. And that's what we're going through right now. So for me, it's fun. It's challenging, sure, how we do this and how we do that, particularly when you work in a digital way, but how to implement performance and automation testing and all that. I see with other areas, not necessarily in our company, I see left and right that other people have the same problems. Spoke with peers of mine in other organizations and they see the same thing. It's probably sometimes on a different scale, but if it's a small company or a big one, they see the same problems and they're looking into how to resolve that. But it's always up to the individuals how they adopt to these challenges. If somebody is, and I don't want to be sound rude, if somebody is in a position that he or she is not getting around with these changes of DevOps, Agile, and this continuously changes. There are definitely other jobs in QA which are more traditional. They will always be there. I don't think there will be as many as there were in the past. Like I personally believe the traditional tester is a very limited role in the future where somebody is really, it goes into automation. We have a big effort. We have 30 people working on automation right now. We are putting really, really a big effort in automation, but this is not to replace the manual tester. It's to transform the manual testers. Testers are way smarter than just pressing buttons. They need to analyze data. They can help influence. There's really good articles on the internet about that where you can read about what actually testing means. Some people say we don't need testing anymore. Other people say testing needs to change. I'm more in the latter group because the tester needs to change. They're usually very knowledgeable people who can help isolating issues, solve problems, influence how we do things. And with automation, they get the opportunity to do that. And they just need to review and analyze what the automation output is. There will be always, even in the digital world, there will be always a small part which need to be done manually. Yes, some people might say there are tools who could do this automatically as well. But I always say, a machine or automation will not tell you if it doesn't look nice. It's like this, the visual part is really where the human brain really helps to identify potential issues or improvements. So everything visual is, I think the human brain is still better than anything else. Everything functional can be done automated more or less.
It's so, I loved what you said there. You know, and I think it's, When I hear the skeptics about automation and innovation and how people's jobs are going to be affected, it's tough. It's a brutal world. But at the end of the day, you have to adjust or you're going to sink, aren't you? I suppose. And this is just another prime example of, it's exciting and people who aren't excited by this shift, are probably in the wrong role. I mean, if you can't get excited about that and making the adjustments, then it's kind of wrong. And I think that you put it really, really well. In that it's not, those jobs aren't going to be extinct. It's just that you're going to have to adjust.
I think they're not wrong. What I mean is it will be just less the competition for these kind of roles might be bigger than. I agree with you, people should be excited about that. But for me as a manager and for my management team, it is part of our job to really explain to people. And automation, you can bring automation into a test team in many different ways. And like, no, we are adding value to what you do. It's not, we're not planning to replace you. Obviously, there's always a financial challenge on something. If you put automation in, you invest money there, it needs to pay back, and it pays back if we can reduce the workforce. But there's a second option. We add value to the team because there's probably some tests which haven't been done or couldn't be done before, which now the same team can do. They can do, or they can provide more. They will be more efficient. With the same people, we can deliver more. So there's a lot of options. And if you explain this to your team, it will help them to understand, and it can motivate them to look into the new functionalities and what they can do. It's simple things like a post live sanity check. If you automate that, you still might need, if you do this overnight because you're still working the world, which we still need to do sometimes because user might be affected. There's still a manual tester around, A, to look at the data which is provided by automation, and B, to do more what I call fancy stuff, like really try to break the system, because otherwise he has only a 2-hour window to do some checks. It's really, really scripted what he can do in these 2 hours. But if this all the scripted part is covered by automation, which will then not take 2 hours, probably only 45 minutes because we can run it more in parallel, in these 45 minutes before the data is available, he can look into what was the problem the last time. Maybe we don't have a script for that. Maybe we cannot, some stuff we cannot automate, that he can quickly cover that and then really try to break the system to provide even a better customer experience, because there might not be so many incidents afterwards.
Really fascinating, really, really interesting what you said. And I love kind of the approach that you're taking and the enthusiasm that you have for the direction that things are going. I suppose the obvious kind of question is, when you're, you know, approaching this from a leadership perspective, what is the, I suppose that you're always going to have a sense of pushback, I would assume. How are you sort of approaching and overcoming this from a leadership standpoint?
I wouldn't call it pushback. There's probably some skepticism and where you need to, but this is again from, if you try to implement something new, at least for this organization, and people would just, yeah, not say anything and not, they're not challenge you. That's actually, I think, bad. I think this is it's all about communication. You cannot just tell them do that and they do this. You don't know if they have understood this. If they start thinking about it and questioning things, then you see that they're getting there. I think this is a rewarding part of it. I prefer somebody questioning what I'm telling him and force me to explain again and again, because then probably I have not explained it the best possible way the first time, and then convince somebody. Or in many cases, I get convinced that I was wrong and we do it a different way. That is what. But from a leadership perspective, it's I think it's, if everybody feels be part of a team and has a voice, then that will bring the team forward. And this will, if somebody knows he has a voice, and even if his voice is heard and then decided against it, he feels valued because you have explained to him why we're doing something differently. And this is all about. It's involving, engaging everybody in the change as good as you can. And in our world, I have a huge team, but more than half of them are based not in the UK. So having them explain them, take the time, do a WebEx session with them, go there. I a couple of weeks back, I was in Bangalore meeting the team there. Just to be there to explain and have this dialogue. It's all about getting them on board. It's a challenge, but it's fun. And it's really rewarding when you see how it all plays together. And hey, we're all in IT long enough, I guess, that we know that there's always ups and downs. And again, yeah, but if everybody is on the same boat, on the same page, sorry, and then they understand, yeah, there's a change coming, and they will have their own ideas how to adopt to that. And I personally love to have this dialogue about how we can improve things. And it's within my team, but also with other teams. So we all need to work this out together, because it's really the team effort which is making the difference.
And I think, you know, I'm conscious of time, but closing thoughts for me as well. You're obviously someone who is, you know, massively engaged and motivated by what they're doing right now. But, you know, aside from sort of the projects that you're working on, you know, what is it that keeps you motivated and pushing? What keeps you ticking over? What is it that, you know, is continuously motivating you to work hard? And
what keeps me going is if the I believe I need to learn every day, and that keeps me going. I want to learn. I there's so much more to come, and we started this journey a couple of months back, and this is a journey, and the goal is to get better. And this drive to constantly get better. And there are a few things which, if you can establish that in an organization or in your team or wherever, whatever group you are, that, simple things like the fear of failure is a blocker in a lot of organizations I worked in. If I can break this down, that people are not afraid something's failing. Yo, we release software and something is breaking live. Obviously, the first question is, has this been tested? Most of the time, the answer is probably yes, but sometimes you miss something. And if people are getting afraid of that is not good for the team. But if you actually look at a failure or something which in this case went live, which is not working as expected, that is a great opportunity to learn. And look, if it happens once and you learn from that and you have things in place to prevent this in the future, you learn something, you got better. And this is not only with those in life, and every arrow you have in the process. If you treat it like that and you get people on board with that who push with you in the same direction, that's what keeps me going, because this is really fun. I utterly like what I'm doing right now, because it's cutting edge. It's something different every day, and a new problem, unfortunately, is every day as well. But yeah, you solve them and then you move on and you get better. You know, this is not going to happen again, or not too often at least. So this is the thing which keeps me going. And again, I said at the beginning, I ended up by accident in QA, which probably most people do, but it doesn't matter if you're in QA or whatever. If you work in an area which you really like, which you believe you can make a change in, and make things better for the, I wouldn't say the greater good, but for the outcome of the company or project you're working on, that motivates me.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. Is andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.